Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Phil Green is Clocked Off. Now, we're going to do things a little bit differently with this one because it's my podcast and I can. So my guest on this episode is Lee O'Brien. Lee is from Liverpool, and it is important to know about Lee. He is a giant of a man. He makes me feel small, which if you know me, that's difficult. So this is probably one of the more dramatic stories I've had in the short time I've been recording these, and so I kind of felt like it was appropriate to split it up over two episodes. So this episode is the first part of my interview with Lee O'Brien, and we kind of set the scene for the worst job he's ever had, but we also delve a little bit deeper into who he is as a man and some of his background in the world of martial arts. So I hope you enjoy it. Hear out the episode and then come back for part two next week, where we go into the true story of how he left the worst job he ever had after being held up at Ice Pick Point. Joining me today is a good friend of mine from all the way back home, Lee O'Brien. Lee, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Phil. How you doing?
I'm doing well, mate. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for generously donating your time and stories to me. I appreciate it.
I have nothing better to do, bro.
And isn't that just the most beautiful thing about this? Is that you can't say no to me because I know that you're not busy.
I'd never say no to you, Phil.
So, if you are listening to this sometime in the future, I mean, A, we made it, so that's good news if you are listening to this sometime in the future. But I am recording this from what I generously refer to as my office, but is actually just my front bedroom with a desk. And I bought a microphone because we're not allowed to go outside right now because of the coronavirus. And I thought, you know what's going to make us feel better? Is remembering times that were worse. And so let's get a bunch of people together and let's talk about bad jobs. So Lee, you and I, as I think has kind of been the case with most people I've spoken to now, met through the wonderful, wacky world of wrestling.
Sir?
And, you know, here's the fun part, right? And you're going to get really mad at me now. I open every interview with asking the question of how did we meet? And usually I know the answer, but genuinely I could name about five different places we've been and I could swear blind that that's when we met. So how did we meet?
Right. To the best of my recollection, I believe it was in Preston at a PCW show. And don't quote me on what show it was. They all blend in together. But you were doing your world famous Jim Powers gimmick. I think I made a rather loud and possibly drunken comment about those beautiful velvet shorts. You loved it, and I'm pretty sure we had some sort of beverage after the show. That's about as close as I'm getting on that one.
So then that would have been because they only let me in Preston once.
Then it's the rumble with the beer hats then.
It's 2013, Spring yep. Slam 2013, and I remember that afterwards there was a thread posted on Facebook that was like, who do you want to see come back to Preston? And a bunch of people were like, Jim Powers, and the owner of Preston was like, yeah, but really? And they were like, no, really? And then he never did.
Well, you know, how dare you get over without his help?
Telling you, man, that brass ring just reaching for it.
Well, it was the funniest part of the whole show, so I loved it, and that's why I'm speaking to you now.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I found a review of that show a few days ago, because somebody that I've met since was like, can we watch you wrestle? So I'm trying to find, you know, all the videos from when I was in Runcorn. They've all gone away now. So I'm trying to find this video from Preston. And I find a review of the show. And it's taking you through like, oh, and then Goldust was there and he did this. And then Kevin Steen had this indie-rific match with Chris Travis, and it was amazing. And then Johnny Gargano, who back then was this little upstart from Dragon Gate, and he did all this indie stuff, and it was amazing. And then Jim Powers comes out, and all of a sudden, you remember you're in England again. I'm telling you, that's going on my gravestone. That's a high honor.
Well, it was tremendous. And when the guy who owned the company sought me out, because we were doing a little podcast, doesn't exist no more, but 30 Minute Pipe Bomb, shout out to the Pipe Bomb boys, asked me my opinion on the show. The best part of the show for me was when you got about six other guys to wear helmets in the middle of a Royal Rumble, and the whole show is available on YouTube.
It sure is. So if you, dear listener, listening to this at home, have a strange desire to watch me do what can only be described as a slut drop for the $1 million man, Ted DiBiase, that is your opportunity.
Who doesn't want to see that? Forget this podcast. Go watch that instead.
Don't forget, pause the podcast. You can pause the podcast. Go and watch that and then come back.
There you go.
All right, we'll give him a second. All right, welcome back. Glad you watched it. And now you can never look at me in the same way again. So, I mean, Lee, we'll do a segue. We'll do a transition. So in wrestling, I didn't win ever. I was what is known as a jobber. And speaking of jobs, that's what we're here to talk about.
Bam, that is so smooth.
Mate, I'm telling you, just completely effortless. It really is. I miss my calling, I think. I should have been a network news anchor or something of that nature.
News anchor.
So what I want to do is, because I think kind of a recurring theme that's come out during this podcast and when I've been speaking to people and setting this up, you know, the worst job in the world for you isn't necessarily the worst job in the world. You know, for someone else, it could be great. So set the scene for me and tell me a little bit about you, which sounds like that horrible, like, first job interview question. But what I mean is, you know, tell me what makes a good job for you. So what do you do that you enjoy?
Wow, that is a loaded question, my friend.
Isn't that a dead good question, though?
Yeah, it is, man. I love it. So for me to be satisfied in the job, is that pretty much what you're asking me?
Yeah. And maybe, like, you know, tell me the things that you actually do or have done that have been good to you.
Okay, so every job has been good to me, bottom line, because I got paid. I don't do anything for free. Not when it comes to work, anyway. I'll do stuff for friends free all day long.
I was going to say, we had this conversation about this podcast, right?
Get some of them old-style Jim Power shorts sent through the mail, though, I'll tell you. Anyway.
I'll do a signed 8x10. And
I'll take that all day long with that sweet-ass new look that you've got, that Lars look. Maybe. But yeah, for me, yeah, I'm not saying money's the most important thing. It definitely isn't. But if you're doing a job, you deserve to get paid, whether it's really badly, like I've been paid in the past, or pretty well, like I get paid now. The people you work with are massively important, and that is highlighted even more by the fact that, like your good self, I'm working in my office, which is my two older girls' back bedroom. They live with their mum, previous relationship and all that, so I've got that room to myself most of the time. And talking to yourself and talking to the dog ain't exactly like the best thing in the world for your mental health.
No.
The people, man. The characters, the customers, good and bad. And just like wanting to be, get up, as cheesy as it sounds, get up, get into work, crack on, have a bit of banter. Know that you've done a good day's work, you've earned your dough, and, you know, you're happy and satisfied, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, from what I know of you, I know, you know, and I see you as someone who likes to be involved and who likes to make connections, right? I think that's pretty fair to say. You know, you usually get pretty involved in marketing and promoting and stuff of that nature, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So what kind of stuff have you done with that?
Well, done a few things over the years. So let's take it back to 16 when I had my first job that involved that. So my dad, I'm not going to go all cats in the cradle, but when him and my mum split up, he was, as part of his second job, he ran a martial arts school, a taekwondo school.
Mm-hmm.
I was 16. I was the most senior grade in the class after him with my black belt. So when he left, it was basically, Lee, you're taking over or the club folds. So I stepped up and I took over a thriving Liverpool martial arts taekwondo club. 50, 60 students, ranging from like 7 years of age up to, I think our oldest guy was about 60, whatever he was. Bit of a culture shock for some of those people, because mm-hmm. the little kid they've known since they were seven was now telling grown-ass men what to do in a respectful manner. But I had to respect the black stripe around my waist, because I earned that. And I was good. I'm not one to blow my own trumpets all the time, but toot on that one, because I was really, really good. I had that going for a long time, so obviously you just did the first forays into, okay, what did you do at GCSE? Business studies, let's use some of that to get this. I didn't know it was a brand. I was just doing it and getting myself out there with like flyers and, you know, little interviews with like local papers and whatnot. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that club in, it went through a few different guises after I kind of passed it on to someone else. But that club still exists till this day. And that's like, you know, a long time afterwards, like 25 years.
So talk to me a little bit, because, you know, I wrestled for a while, but I was never really a martial artist, but I've always kind of, I've known people involved in martial arts. Like, I know, you know, I have a good friend who does some MMA and is also an MMA photographer. I've got friends involved in ring announcing for MMA shows. And something that's really always been glaringly apparent to me is that there's something, and I think you kind of almost naturally touched upon it yourself when you said that then, there's something very unique about that scene in Liverpool specifically, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a family, you know, and that's such a cliche, but it's always seemed to me like everybody who's done some kind of martial arts in Liverpool knows everybody else.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. Case in point, and if he listens to this, he will hate me for this next bit. In a good way. So, after said father moved away and I took over, I needed and was desperate for a father figure. So I had a friend, I'm not going to full name him, I'm just going to call him Tomo and leave it at that. He was like a red belt at the time, which is like two off black.
Mm-hmm.
He's about 8 years older than me, and he was everything rolled into one: father figure, mentor, confidant, big brother. And he's the guy that still runs Liverpool Taekwondo now. He will forever be everything to me, basically, at that time. Because without him, and without having the Taekwondo class, I might have gone a completely different way in life. So, yeah, it's big time, especially, like, I'm, you know, his partner and the kids. Like, I watch the kids grow up, and one of them's now, like, just turned pro boxing. Mm-hmm. The other one's an actor at Lipper. And to see them do so well from two little rag-ass kids from LA to Liverpool, it's pretty special, to be honest with you. And there's loads of people that I still see and still know, lifetimes, friendships, just from martial arts. Now, I'm not saying every martial arts club like that, because there's some bad ones out there that are clueless and they shouldn't even be able to open a class.
Mm-hmm.
But ours was good. It was good in every way. And as I say, the scene in Liverpool is, it is good. I mean, that it's one of those, it's a working class city at the end of the day. And the vast majority of us, sorry, have to fight for everything we get. And that's like, that. I think that's just, it's a big city, but with a small town community mentality for me. And the Taekwondo is just like icing on the cake for me.
So, you know, we've spoken a lot about martial arts, which you would think would be unrelated to the purpose of the podcast, which is to talk about the worst job you've ever had. But something gives me a feeling that it's not that unrelated. So what is the worst job that you've ever had that you're here to talk about today?
So my worst slash possibly best job I've ever had was working in a petrol station, service station for our American cousins.
So a gas station, if you will.
Gas station, there we go. There it is. And if I can paint the picture for you, it was at the bottom of Smithdown Road, which is basically a long stretch of road that leads out of Liverpool city centre through pretty rough part of Liverpool and then comes out into the more leafier suburbs of Allerton and Egbert and places like that. So I was slap bang in the middle of fun times, shall we say.
And that's, I mean, you know, to give a little bit more context there, that is the student area, right? Like, that's where the cheap housing is that students get to actually live in.
Absolutely, yeah, Studentville. So you get a really nice mix-up of, like, old-school Liverpool people who've lived in that area forever, generations, your new influx of students, immigrant population's quite high there. And I think, for the most part, everyone just gets on because I don't think, I'm not saying the whole of Liverpool, the whole of that area is colourblind, it's not. And I've seen it perpetrated against the guy I was talking about before who's mixed-raced, so it's not all rainbows and sunshine, but the vast majority of the people around there are sound.
I grew up in a little terraced house right next to a petrol station. It was owned by a Sri Lankan family, and this was in Sleepy Prescott, right? So, you know, it's a quiet, relatively, you know, allegedly less so, but I would still argue it's pretty safe. And I still remember picking up my weekly issue of the Beano when I was a little kid, and it was all covered in blood because the place had been raided the night before, and the fellow who was on the night shift got beat up and had his head smashed into the comic. So if that's in Sleepy Prescott, I mean, please tell me how you survived. Question.
Mate, no, you have no idea. So we'll circle back to this bit at the end. But how I left there, my last shift, I got held up. We'll just leave that there.
So you said it was the best worst job you've ever had. So what was good apart from getting paid?
Mate, just the banter and the absolute characters that you're seeing come into that place. The people I work with for a start. So the guy who owned it, and I mean not the manager, the actual guy who owned the franchise, it was a 24-hour station. I think it was an Elf station back in the day, if you remember them. He was just like basically rich, white guy done well. Liverpool guy, but kind of moved on up to the east side. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was like ending his sentences, consonants, like, you know, hard G's and stuff like that. He was kind of like, I'm from Liverpool, but I've kind of like, I'm better than Liverpool now. But, so he was okay. The manager was an absolute goon. Absolutely clueless in everything that he did. It was just, how have you blagged your way from my level to your level? Because he was only about 10 years older than me. So I was about 20. So he'd be 30. He looked about 40. If you've ever seen someone on Guess Who with the whole, like, you know, too much, like, egg in the nest hair going on and just, but he was always, like, he was, like, he was the most serious person ever as well. So he took being the manager of that place really seriously. And the people that work for him, it was like, I'm going to give you this opportunity on $3.50 an hour to do before minimum wage, bro. To you know, come in here, and if you work hard, there's overtime, and if you work hard, you could get to like assistant manager, and one day you could be sitting in my seat. And I'm like, bro, if I'm sitting in my seat, your seat in the next 10 years, I'm probably going to kill myself.
I mean, that's interesting to me, and you've had, I think it's fair to say, you know, your CV is relatively eclectic, right? You've had a few different jobs,
yeah.
And you've landed, you know, you're pretty happy, pretty comfortable right now. Sure. You're in a job that's affording you the opportunity to work from home, so it's, you know, by at least some measures, a decent job. I don't know about you, but I feel like I have a theory when it comes to the workplace that the more nonsensical and pointless the job is, the more the manager takes it seriously.
Absolutely, bro. I can't. I'm struggling here now because I was biting my lip because I was just about to burst out laughing. You nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. It's like that little bit of, like, you know, what you've just said, and then just like you kind of got that just smidgen, a little smidgen of power. And you're basically, this is my realm. I am the cock of the walk in this little service station, call center, whatever you want to call it. And it's all about my way or the highway. And
yeah,
at the end of the day, if I don't turn up for a shift in the service station, ain't no one going to care. And if you're up for a week, no one cares.
It's funny that you mentioned call centers, because you just reminded me of, so I have had the misfortune of working in a call center twice now, and it was the same call center both times. And, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing twice and expecting a different result, but that's neither here nor there. The very first time I was there for just under a year, and, you know, I got along with my team leader. He was a good guy. He was someone who was genuinely good at the job itself. You know, he's someone who'd been promoted, I would say, correctly. He hadn't been promoted for his, like, leadership skills. He'd been promoted because, genuinely, he was good at the job and was good at showing other people how to do the job. And I appreciated him for that. And we got on well. And I remember one day he went for a job interview at the Royal Air Force, and he comes in the next day, and I go up to him like, oh, you know, how did it go yesterday? Did it go well? And he's like, no, they laughed me out of the building. I'm like, oh my God, what did you do? And he's like, well, I'd applied for a job with that required leadership experience of at least a year. And I told them that I've been doing this for 18 months. And they said that a call center manager isn't a real manager. And then they sent me on my way.
Wow. Harsh.
I mean, harsh, but at the same time, kind of true.
100% true.
It's like you say, the world just isn't going to fall apart if we don't have call center managers.
Sure, absolutely. Same with the service station guy. Anyway, yeah, he was all right. Again, though, he was all right. As I say, it was amusing to me how serious he took it. So I would play up to that because I'm a bit of an arse. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, you know, coming in, like when I first started, before I got promoted to the night shift, you know, oof, I started 7 o'clock till 3, so 7 a.m. till 3 p.m. shift. So that was an easy ride because obviously you're not getting too much shenanigans, although that was the shift I got held up on.
Spoilers.
Yeah. So you kind of like get eased in with like the easy one where you're getting like students aren't up at 7 o'clock. You know what I mean? So they're getting up at 12, so you ain't seeing them till like middle of the afternoon. You're getting like you're traveling to work, guys and girls, and just like the easy times. But it would come in, and it was like, you know, be on time for your shift, get your float ready. So I'd come in the morning, half asleep, try and wake myself up in the little 5 minute walk after getting off the bus. And then he'd be like, all right, I think his name was Dave, let's call him Dave. All right, Dave, yeah. And he'd be like, you ready to go, Lee? You ready? You ready to face Monday? And I'd be like, yes, Dave, I'm ready to face Monday.
Just a little petrol pep talk.
Yeah, Dave, come on. And it'd be funny. And then I'd work with this other kid called Marvin. And Marvin gave zero Fs. So I'd usually take over from him. So he'd done the night shift. And I should have seen it in Marvin's eyes to never accept that night shift position. Because Marvin had done 11 till 7. Let me just set the scene for you.
All right.
Saturday night, after the clubs are emptying out in Liverpool, in a really busy area, 11 p.m. till 7 in the morning. You're talking Zombieville. You're talking scary times for Marvin, and I could see it. Marvin had PTSD. I could see it in his face.
Now, I mean, for anyone not from Liverpool that's listening, I mean, let's kind of explain that when a night out in Liverpool ends, it doesn't actually end. Like, you've got pre-gaming, but I think Liverpool has post-gaming as well. You know, you see everybody stumbling out of the crazy house at 2 a.m. or whatever it might be. And they're not, nobody's actually going home, right? Everybody is finding food or finding somewhere that's still open to get more alcohol to take home and keep it going.
Yep.
Nobody's going home, lying down and sleeping it off. Everybody's coming to you to get something else, right?
Yeah, 100%. So, say the day shift was easy, just eased me in with a couple of the nice ones. You get your regulars. I had a guy who was the absolute spit of like a Noel Coward-y type Quinton Crisp guy. He'd rock up in like this old style Morris Minor, immaculate. He'd get out the car and he was dressed unbelievably well for like a Wednesday at like 8 o'clock in the morning. Like, when you're retired, you must be retired because you're at least 70. And he'd just bimble in, full suit, sometimes a coat, usually like a nice little hat as well. And I'd be like, damn, this guy's a pimp. Look at him. And he'd just come with the same nice attitude every day. He'd brighten up your day. When you spoke to him, it was like, this guy's just coming here. And I'm like, I'm so happy having to speak. I'd be waiting. I'd be looking out the window. Because it was every, he'd fill up every week and I'd be looking out the window. Here he is. Here he is. He's just coming.
I'm picturing you practicing what you're going to say to him. I'm picturing you like see him pull up and you turn to a mirror and you're like practicing your smile like you're going on a first date or something like that.
100%. I need to raise my game because he was like, this guy raised the game by the type of like car he just pulled up in. It wasn't a flash like Lamborghini or something. It was an old style, cool as you like British car. He'd get out, crisp as you like. He wasn't rushing for no one. He would take his time, driving gloves. He'd swap them out. Then he'd throw on some like the little rubber gloves that they have. So we didn't want to get petrol on his like well manicured hands. Did this guy ever go over the 40 quid by a penny? Of course he didn't. He wouldn't. The error. Bam, £40 on the nose each time he'd come in. He paid by check. That's how cool he was. He'd be just whipping out like a fountain pen and just signing his name with a flourish. And I'd just be in awe of this guy. He was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Still, I mean,
this is the kind of guy where I want to know what he's doing in quarantine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just picturing this is the kind of guy that still gets up, still puts his full suit on to go and sit in the living room and smoke a pipe.
100%. You know he's doing that because he's just got, he's got class, and he was the best one in the day. But what were we?
Thank you so much for listening to part one of my interview with Lee O'Brien. Make sure to join us back here next Friday for the conclusion of the story, where we'll get to hear the true story of him leaving the job after being held up at the petrol station. Phil Green is Clocked Off is available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and we'll see you real soon. Bye!